And I don't think sometimes we appreciate the fact that God actually guides us through those moments in life, that He actually educates us and shares with us some knowledge that will kind of help us in those moments where we're just frustrated and we're disappointed and we're just angry even at times because we can't seem to get through certain challenges and problems that we're trying to address in our personal lives, in our work lives, in our family lives, wherever it is that we might find ourselves. And so for our Bible study time for a little while this morning, I'd like to just share with you a handful of things that I think that you and I can do in order to maybe help us get through those moments, even when we might not be able to find complete resolve, at least we might be able to find peace of mind in the midst of those challenges. Let me suggest to you, first of all, in our study this morning, that the first thing you need to do is this. We don't do enough of that. Because I think we've convinced ourselves that we have the answers within ourselves. That if there's a problem, if there's some issue, if there's something going on, I can fix it. Men are especially like that, by the way, ladies. We and you're dealing with a problem with a man, if you're dealing with a problem with your husband or something, I want you to realize that's kind of the way we think. We are fixers. That's our brain is kind of wired that way. We believe and have great confidences in ourselves that we can always fix things. And sometimes, though, the power to fix things isn't within our own abilities. And we need to recognize that maybe, instead of maybe, we should say most certainly, we should be bringing those challenges and problems before the throne of God. In James chapter 1, notice verse 5 with me if you're not there yet. In James chapter 1 and in verse 5, notice that he says that if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. Now, I want you to just notice something. Mark it down that you and I will at some point in time in our life find ourselves exactly in that circumstance. That all of us at some point will be the person who lacks wisdom. We don't always know the answers. We don't always have the best judgment. We don't always know exactly how to address every circumstance. And so what God says is, what you need to do is get in your prayer corner, get wherever it is that you go to petition the Father, and ask for wisdom. He says, those who approach the throne of God and ask Him for wisdom, He giveth to all liberally. You know, when you think about something being offered in a liberal fashion, what we generally think, that's a scary word to us sometimes, the idea of being liberal. But there is positive ways the word liberal can be used. And when it comes to the blessings of God, that's certainly one of the ways. God says, I give blessings in a liberal way. I pour them out. The wisdom that I will grant unto you is beyond measure. And so the first step that we need to do when we're addressing those uphill battles, when we're dealing with the challenges that we can't seem to resolve, start asking God for help. Start asking God, not just fix this problem for me, Lord, but give me wisdom in order to address it. Give me the knowledge, the understanding. Give me something that will benefit me as I address these challenges. In 1 John chapter 5 and in verse 16, the writer John simply says here in 1 John 5 and verse 16, if anyone sees his brother sinning a sin which does not lead to death, he will ask and he will give him life. For those who commit sin not leading to death, there is a sin leading to death. I do not say that he should pray about that. And I don't want you to get hung up in the back part of the passage. I want you to see the first part. If you're fighting these battles, if you're dealing with these challenges with folks, and you need to get these sinful things resolved, there's some error in somebody's life and some problem that you're trying to get resolved, pray to God. Ask Him to help you find resolve. Ask Him to help you cover these sins, to help them find repentance for these things. Petition the Father. Don't forget that God needs to be part of this package, that God needs to be part of our efforts as addressing these challenges and difficulties that we're dealing with. Ask. Go to God in prayer and ask and petition Him for assistance. Secondly, we need to consistently keep God first personally. You see, I think what happens is we get in this mindset that you fight fire with fire. And that once somebody has, as long as they're willing to act Christian, I'm willing to act Christian. But the moment they go worldly, I've determined that I got to go worldly too. The moment they go in a certain direction, you say, well, the gloves are off now. Everything's off now. I'm going to have to deal with them the way they're dealing with me. And that just creates greater problems. When you deal with a worldly person in a worldly way, you only aggravate the circumstance. You only make it worse because now they are having you play the game, if you will, on their field. They've got you addressing things in their terminology. They have you addressing and dealing with these issues from their perspective. And so in all efforts that you make, in everything that you do in trying to resolve problems, keep God first consistently. No matter what other people are doing and no matter how they might be dealing with you as you try to encourage them. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 33, it's a familiar passage of Scripture where Jesus here within the Sermon on the Mount said simply, "But seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." Seek God first. When you're addressing problems, challenges, when you hit those barriers and walls, when you can't seem to get things resolved, those are especially important moments to remind ourselves that God has to come first in this circumstance. That I cannot relinquish my faith and convictions in Him. I cannot allow for anything to distract me from that fact. Over in Matthew chapter 10 and in verse 37, if you note Jesus' statement again just a few chapters over, in Matthew 10 and verse 37, He simply said, "He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." There's a great temptation, especially when it comes to family, when we're addressing problems and challenges that are very personal. There are some of the challenges and problems that are the closest to us. There is a tendency to want to change the rules. There's a tendency to want to kind of come at that circumstance from a different perspective. But I want you to apply this principle that Jesus just shared with us in Matthew 10 and verse 37 to those circumstances. Because what He said was, is that you cannot place mother, father, daughter, son, cousin, brother, throw anything in there the principle is teaching. You cannot place that circumstance over top of your relationship with God. And many times we create greater problems. We make things more difficult because we always feel like we have to make concessions. We always feel like, especially with family, because we're trying to keep a greater peace in our minds, we're trying to keep things on an even keel, we're trying to just not have bad family reunions, we're doing all those kinds of things, and all we're doing is making the problem worse. All we're doing by sacrificing God in the mix, by sacrificing conviction, by sacrificing putting God first, we're only making the problem worse. It can't get better. That's just an endless cycle. If you're always making concessions, if you and I are always making concessions, well, God, you're going to have to play second base for a little while here. God, your principles are going to have to be set aside because I'm dealing with really an ornery person. I'm dealing with somebody who doesn't want to listen. I'm dealing with somebody who has no spiritual mindset. I'm dealing with some problem where they're not going to come at it from a Christian perspective. So I'm going to set you aside in order to address it. If you love father, mother, daughter, son more than God, you will only create greater problems. You and I make the problem worse. When they won't listen, don't fall prey to the temptation of conceding godly principles. Don't fall prey to the idea that you have to give in on your spiritual convictions in order to make this circumstance feel and seem better. Because, friends, the truth of the matter, it will only be a surface issue. You will only make it feel better. It won't be better. It may feel better. It may have an appearance of being better, but it won't be. The underlying problems will still be there. The underlying issues and currents and challenges, they're not going to go away simply because we turned a blind eye, simply because we conceded on conviction. The problem will still be there. So if they won't listen and you're having problems, keep consistent in your relationship with God. Ephesians 5 verse 11 simply said, "Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them." Don't dare concede to sin. Don't dare give in to worldly thinking. Expose those things, He said. Bring them to light. And certainly, don't abide by them. Certainly, don't adopt them into your own life in order to try to make something better. First pray, then be dedicated to spiritual principles every step of the way. Third, trust God. Trust Him. And when I say that, I mean it in the deepest way possible. Trust it. We say we're believers in God. We say we're followers of God. We say that He's our Creator. We make all the right blanket, generic kinds of statements that we need to make in life. But how often do I really, really trust Him? That His way will work every time. That His principles will work in every circumstance. That there's no need in any moment of any time to ever change what God says will work. James 1, verse 2, if you're not there yet. In James 1 and verse 2, he says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." Endure through the trials and challenges. Endure with patience. That let those things have their perfect work. Let them make you complete. Allow them to fulfill your efforts to endure and to bring greater benefit in the long run. Trust God. In the midst of challenge, find joy. In the midst of trial, persecution, troubles, tribulation, find joy, because these things are making me better. The more I trust God, the stronger I am in my relationship with Him. The more opportunities that I have to trust in Him, to put my faith in Him, to put my confidences in Him, the stronger I'll be. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13 is another familiar passage where he simply said that with every temptation, God provides what? You can say, what's He provide? Way of escape. Do you believe that? I know you know the verse because we read it all the time. I'm asking you, do you believe it? Do you honestly believe that with every temptation, with every trial, with every challenge, there is a way of escape? You see, I think sometimes we miss the way of escape because we don't believe God. We missed God opened the door. It was there. The opportunity to resolve this, the opportunity to avoid this temptation, the opportunity to get through this trial, it was present. But because I don't really believe God will do that, I didn't see it. I didn't see the open door. I didn't see that escape route that God laid before me. The opportunity that I had to resolve this, but because I'm not convinced that God will actually do that, I'm not really paying attention. I'm in the midst of a problem, Brian. How am I supposed to pay attention to escape routes? I'm in the midst of a challenge. Somebody's dealing with me in harmful ways. Somebody's not treating me right. I'm in the midst of battle. How am I supposed to see the way of escape? Well, if we have the kind of convictions and trust in God that He will actually fulfill those things, we'll be looking all the time. We'll be constantly on alert to what God's providing for us. I can't tell you how many times in relationship to a variety of kinds of circumstances, where a day or two later, I'll look back and I'll just shake my head at myself. There was opportunity. There was an escape route for that circumstance. Here was a help that God had laid before. Here were all these things. All this was right there. Because I was upset, or because I was angry, because I was dealing with somebody that doesn't like me too much, because the circumstance wasn't right, I didn't see it. We've got to trust God enough to have our eyes opened. In 1 Peter chapter 5 and in verse 6, he said, "Therefore humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time." Humility. Humble yourselves in the presence of God. Let Him exalt and lift you up. Trust Him. I think sometimes we fail to resolve challenges and difficulties that we have to address because simply we don't believe God can help us. We don't pray because we don't believe God can help us. We don't do the kinds of things. We don't stay consistent. We don't stay dedicated to spiritual principles. We don't walk the line and walk the path that God designs for us because we simply have a trust issue. Relationship to God. Number four, when it comes to dealing with challenges and problems, especially when you're trying to resolve some conflict with somebody, then we need to remember to live what we say. Too many of us, because we come at things so hypocritically, we leave ourselves vulnerable. we don't have a spiritual position to stand on because we've made so many concessions along the way. You see, remember when we talked earlier about the idea of when we concede spiritual conviction, it only makes the problem worse? Here's why. Because the moment you start walking that path, the moment you start conceding certain things and saying, okay, I'm going to have to give up on that principle. Okay, I'm going to have to let that one go. All right, now that one's got to go. We just keep going. And once you have given somebody the feeling that you are willing to concede your principles, once you give somebody the image in their mind that you are willing to make concessions, that you're willing to give up on your convictions, then they're going to expect you to do that at every turn. They're going to expect you to do that in every circumstance. And so you and I have to determine, trust God, be consistent, and live it. Not just say it, live it. 1 Peter chapter 3 and in verse 1, I want you to notice this example he shared with us. He says, wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives. Nothing necessarily that she said. It has everything to do with how she lived. Not that she browbeat him every single day. Not that she consistently always saying these things. It wasn't anything to do with what she said. It had everything to do with the way she conducted herself. Now, I'm not saying that she shouldn't share some words once in a while. I'm not saying that she doesn't have an opportunity to speak God's truth and love. That's not my point. My point is simply this, though. It was her conduct that won the day. It was her consistent spiritual life that won the day. You bounce down into verse 15. He said, but sanctify the Lord God in your hearts and always be ready to give a defense to everyone who asks you a reason for the hope that is in you with meekness and fear. We have to be ready to give a defense of our hope, our steadfastness in our relationship with God, the reasons why we do things the way we do, the reasons why we believe the way we believe, to give a defense of that hope, that anchor of our soul. Friends, you want to overcome challenges and problems you're trying to address. When folks are bringing temptations and don't start walking that concession path. Don't start walking that path that says, well, I'm going to have to give up these spiritual principles. I'm not going to be able to honor these because it's making that circumstance temporarily more difficult. You and I have to live it. You and I have to live those principles. And those folks that we're addressing and those folks that we're dealing with and those who are challenging our spiritual conduct, don't give them a reason. Don't give them a reason to come back and illustrate your hypocrisy. Don't give them an opportunity to show, well, here were some things that you acquiesced on. If you gave in on those, then why can't you give in on these? If you were able to give up these spiritual principles, then why can't you give up these spiritual principles? That path will never end. Live it. When you're dealing with troubles and problems with others, live what it is you're preaching and teaching. Don't give an inconsistent message. Don't give people an impression that you say one thing and do something completely different, because that only makes the challenge worse. And then fifth, be careful what you say. Words are hard to get back. No matter sometimes how much we try, words are hard to get back. This week, I've kind of used to, my office used to be at the building, and I've kind of transitioned that to home. Now that all three of the kids are old enough to be in school. Sorry, Deborah, didn't mean to bring up a soft spot for you. But now that all of them are in school, and it's a little quieter around there, except when I hear, you know, put that light bulb in, sweep that floor, and that kind of stuff. But I'm working at home. Deborah was there the other day when I was recording the radio program, and she came downstairs assuming I was done, and I hadn't even got started hardly. And she said, "Well, I've heard you talking," and I said, "Yeah, I'd say five sentences, and I'd erase it, and I'd say five sentences, and I'd erase it, and I'd say five, and I'd erase it," because it just, I couldn't get rolling in the direction I wanted to. I just could not get it done. But I had the privilege of being able to say those five sentences and erase them and start over and erase them. You don't have that opportunity when you're dealing with real people. I'm staring at a microphone and a computer. I have that opportunity in a microphone and a computer, but we don't have that opportunity with people. And once you've spoken something, it is hard to get words back. Most people, Most people, though it's wrong, but most people are not very forgiving about the things that you say. And sometimes you may plead and beg. You may try to stand your ground on another. You may do everything you can, but words are hard to get back. And so he said in Colossians 4 and in verse 6, in Colossians 4 and in verse 6, he says, "Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how," I love that phrase, "how you ought to answer every man." Remember earlier we talked about we need to be able to give the reason for our faith and hope. We need to be able to give the reason, a defense for why it is we believe the way we believe. Well, this passage demonstrates that we also are accountable to the manner in which we share that information. That you and I are accountable to the how. It is not just what you say, in other words. You see, sometimes we get convinced that, well, no matter how I say it, here's some things that need to be said, and I'm saying them. I have the right. No, God said through the Apostle Paul that I have to be just as cautious and just as protective of the manner in which I say things. You ought to know how to answer every man. You have to be careful. You have to choose wisely. Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt. Make what you're saying palatable. If you're dealing with a challenge, if you're dealing with somebody who is, you're trying to resolve some conflict, if you get angry, what do they tend to do? They get angry back, don't they? You raise your voice, what do? They raise their voice. You raise yours a little more, they raise theirs a little more. It's endless, isn't it? It's endless. You get in a shouting match with somebody, what's the end result? But you let your speech be with grace, seasoned with salt. You let the manner in which you convey information be effective. Let your approach, if they want to challenge your message, then that's on them. But don't give them a reason to deny the message because of the manner in which you and I presented it. Don't give them an opportunity to say to you and I, well, I don't have to listen to you. Look how you're treating me. Look how you're dealing with me. Look at your anger. Look at the manner in which you're approaching me. Don't give people an opportunity to reject what you're saying because of the attitude that's promoting the message. That, I believe, is what Colossians 4 and verse 6 is talking about. You and I have to be very careful of what we say, and we have to be very careful of how we say it. Many challenges and problems, when folks won't listen and they're not concerned, many of those challenges get worse because of our manner. And then sixth, we have to be willing to admit that we're not always right. We have to be willing to admit that we can be wrong. If you and I have a mindset that I could never be wrong, and believe the Bible said, let that man take heed lest he fall. He needs to be very careful that he hasn't so convinced himself that he did this circumstance. I know without a shadow of doubt that I can never be wrong. I'm never wrong. That message will not ring very clear or won't be very promoting to peace that we might be seeking. I want you to notice Matthew chapter 5. Just notice a couple of things with me. Matthew chapter 5, verse 23. Again, the teachings of Jesus in this context. Matthew 5, verse 23. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. What I've always appreciated about this passage is simply this, that you can come into this building all day long. We could have decided to have this gospel meeting this week, and we're going to start this morning at 9:30, and we're going to go nonstop till Friday night. We're going to have a service every hour on the hour, and you could be at every single one of those services, every hour on the hour for the entire week. And if there's somebody out there that you have unresolved sin with, then you've wasted your time. That's what Matthew 5 just taught me. Don't come to the altar of worship. Don't come before the throne of God expecting that to erase all the issues that I need to address in life. Don't feel like that all I need to do is assemble and sit in a pew and that will make up for everything that I've got going on out here that needs to be addressed. Jesus said in Matthew 5, if you've got a challenge with your brother, you've come to worship, you've got your gift, you've got your sacrifice to bring before the altar, and then you remember, you know what, I've got some unfinished business back here. I've got somebody that I need to address these things with. Then you and I need to lay our gift down, he said, go address it, then come back and offer our worship before the throne of God. What Jesus is illustrating is the priority of the matter. Priority of saying, I've got to resolve these things, and I have to maybe be willing to admit that I'm part of the problem. In Matthew chapter 18 and in verse 6, again, the statements of Jesus. When he talks about offending little ones, his believers, his followers, he said, whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. You and I could be part of the problem. You and I could be the one who is setting a stumbling block. You and I could be the very one who's creating the challenge. Am I willing to admit that? And if so, am I willing to go and resolve it? Am I willing to go and address it? Am I willing to recognize that I could be part of this problem? Because if I'm not, you know, generally speaking, just a rule of thumb, if you've got a fella who is unwilling to admit that he could at least potentially be part of the problem, he's probably the problem. If he's unwilling to even at least for a moment consider that there may be something he needs to look at, then he's probably the issue. In James chapter 5 and verse 16, he said, confess your trespasses to one another and pray for one another, that ye may be healed. The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. You know what's interesting about that? We usually quote that passage in relationship to sick folks. We talk about physically sick. Somebody's in a hospital and we say, well, pray for them. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. I appreciate the principle. But the context is spiritual. The context of that statement, the effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man, he's addressing spiritual issues in this moment. He's addressing problems that are spiritual in nature. He says, if you've got folks who have transgressions, you have folks who have trespassed, you have folks who need to confess and acknowledge their own faults and admit that they've made some mistakes, then pray for those. Acknowledge those. Be effective in your prayers. Be fervent in your prayers in those circumstances. But be willing to admit that it could be willing to confess. You know, it can go a long way in your dealings with folks who are troubled or problem. You've got some issue to deal with. It can go a long way. It can go a long way just to be willing to say to somebody, you know, that was my fault. That was me. I should have done this. I should have done that. I should have been more polite. I should have been more caring. Whatever it is, it needs to be admitted. But it can go a long way to diffusing a lot of potential issues when you can kind of diffuse the problem by simply being willing to admit your own faults in the issue. If you've had something that's been festering for a long time, if you've had some long ongoing feud with somebody, if you have had some kind of circumstance that has just been on and on and on that you can't and for years have never been able to resolve, then let me suggest to you maybe the first place to start after prayer is to maybe go to that person and say, you know, I've made some mistakes in this and I'm willing to admit that. Can't we seem to resolve this? Let's see if we can't fix these things. You can diffuse an argument sometimes very quickly by being willing to admit the failures on our own part when it comes to those things. And then finally, when they won't listen and they just have no interest whatsoever, when they have no interest whatsoever in trying to correct it and trying to resolve it, then you and I have to press forward anyway. You and I have to press forward in our faith, in our confidences, in our convictions, in our Christian principles, even despite what others are doing. In Philippians chapter 3 and in verse 13, he said this, "Brethren, I do not count myself to have apprehended, but one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forward to those things which are ahead, I press toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus." There have been countless, countless folks who have abandoned their relationship with God because of what somebody else did. They get upset because somebody mistreated them. They get upset because somebody didn't talk to them. Somebody didn't say the right things to them. Somebody didn't come to visit them when they wanted them. Somebody, whatever. It's a litany. The pages, the scrolls could not contain the list of reasons why people have abandoned God because of what somebody else did or said. Friends, you and I need to recognize that our obligation is to press forward regardless of what others do. And that may mean just saying, you know, I'm going to put it behind me. I'm going to have to forget about it. If I go to bed thinking about it every night, I wake up. I'll break that before the week's over. I go to bed every night thinking about it. I wake up every morning thinking about it. If it's always on my mind, how am I pressing forward if I'm always looking back at some problem? You know, a lot of those problems have already been done. They're over with. But we just can't let it go. I just don't think he did quite enough. He didn't really say everything I wanted him to say. He really didn't change in everything that I wanted him to change. And we're just constantly dealing with it. Paul said the best way, and sometimes the only way, to press forward is to put the past in the past. And one of the greatest challenges we have sometimes as Christians is to recognize that we're all forward-thinking people. We're not past-thinking people. We're forward-thinking people. God's children look ahead. They don't look backwards. We look ahead. Once things are forgiven and once things have been resolved, we don't keep going back to those things. We press forward. Too many people simply aren't pressing forward in their relationship with God. Too many folks have let hindrances and obstacles and challenges, their mind just can't seem to get over it. You know, maybe it's time for me to just simply say, I'm done. I'm not going to let this bother me anymore. I'm not going to let this challenge me anymore. You may not be able to convince every person that you've ever had a problem with to seek your forgiveness. You may never convince everybody that you've had some challenge with to resolve those things in a perfect environment. You may never be able to resolve every single thing that has ever happened in your life. But don't let that keep dragging you backwards into the past. Don't let those things continually pull you back into those circumstances. Because Christians move forward in their relationship with God. We don't move backwards. We press on to the high calling of God. We move forward in our relationship with Him. We press forward in our service to Him. We get stronger. We get more faithful. We get dedicated. We grow in our convictions. We do all things that are necessary in order to move forward. But if you're clinging to some grudge, if you're clinging to some moment in your past where somebody said or did or acted in some unkind way, then it's only going to hinder you. It's only going to pull you down. Why do that? Why let those circumstances win? I've never fully understood why people will let some of the most difficult challenges in life, where people act absolutely unkind, they act in worldly ways, they do everything that is absolutely contrary to God's will, and we let those things pull us away from God, when those things should actually push us and propel us towards God. It should remind us that there are bigger and better things for us. It should remind us that our Creator should be our focus. Friends, we are absolutely of no value to anyone if we lose our own faith through discouragement. You and I will be of absolutely no value to anyone if we continually pull ourselves backwards. How am I going to pull somebody and encourage them? How am I going to lead them to Christ? How am I going to encourage them to resolve issues that they have, number one, with God and maybe with others? How am I going to be of any help at all if I let my own faith be weakened in the process? If I walk away from God, simply because others have created challenge. There are going to be times when folks simply aren't going to listen to you. You've tried, and I'm not saying give up. I'm just saying recognize that you may not always win. You may not always get their respect. You may not always gain their attention. You may not always be as successful as you would like to be. But don't feel like you've got to change your consistent behavior and your relationship with God along the way. Don't feel like that you've got to give in on principles of God in order to make these circumstances better. You and I need to press forward in our faith. You and I need to press forward in our relationship with God. And we'll be stronger as a result if we consistently keep God first every step of the way.